You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome back, everybody, and a happy Monday afternoon. Hope your Monday has gone well after a long holiday weekend. I've got a fine guest co-host with me. His name is Matt Rothschild. Thanks again, Matt, for being with me on Mondays and for guest hosting while I was away. It's a pleasure to be here with you. Folks, a bit of breaking news this afternoon in case you missed it earlier today. El Salvador filed legal papers with the United Nations indicating that the United States both facilitated the use of the Salvadorian prison infrastructure and retained jurisdiction over all U.S. deportees that were imprisoned at the Salvadorian prison. That's a big deal. Just breaking this afternoon, we'll be tracking that story. Also, City of Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson announcing the withdrawal of a $34 million revitalization grant for the 6th Street corridor in Milwaukee. That'll cost Milwaukee ballpark 450 to 500 jobs. Courtesy of the Trump administration. Big thanks to State Senator Dianne Hesselbein, who joined us for the last half hour talking about what improvements Democrats were able to get over the GOP proposed budget. And that brings me, Matt, to our next subject, because there has been a lot of debate, some of it tied to the biennial budget, from some Democrats saying, you know, the governor didn't go hard enough, didn't draw enough bright lines in the sand, didn't go out there and advocate for his budget, didn't make a strong enough case across the state. And basically, he shouldn't run for a third term. Of course, Matt and I want to hear from all of you. What do you think? Should the governor run for a third term? Should he have decided a while ago? Should he have made it clear before the budget? Is it appropriate to say now, or should he wait longer? 855-752-4842. 855-75-CIVIC. It's also completely fine to say, I don't care. I just want things to work better, which we will discuss as well. Here's another way to put this question to you. If tomorrow's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Cap Times, whatever your favorite local news outlet is, if the headline tomorrow was, Governor Evers announces run for third term, what would your immediate reaction be? 855-752-4842. This is one of these fascinating questions, Matt, because I think Tony Evers, from a personality standpoint, is someone that appeals to Wisconsinites. He's not a great speaker. That actually plays to his advantage, I think, as a candidate, because he sounds like a regular person. You believe what he's saying. He doesn't seem like a slicked up politician. And he's also an incredibly affable, nice guy. I think he feels like somebody a lot of Wisconsinites know. And I think that authenticity, that believing what you say, that person, that candidate that people can see, touch, and feel is really important now. That's been one of the lessons from these last few election cycles, regardless of which particular race you're looking at. How important do you think likability and relatability, and what I'm just going to call regular personability, is for especially Wisconsinites in election cycles?
Well, I do think that's how he's gotten elected twice. You know, he knows who he is. He doesn't pretend to be someone he isn't. In some ways, it's odd that he's become governor and that he's won twice, because he doesn't have great natural political skills. As you say, he's not a great speaker. He's kind of a horrible debater, if truth be told.
Yes,
he's been a really good governor, though. You know, I wish he was more of a fighter. I wish he fought harder on the budget or publicly campaigned harder and drew more lines in the sand and was able, if at all possible, to get more money K-12. I mean, that's one of the crucial things that was missing as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, I understand that the Democrats don't have the cards in the legislature.
Right.
I understand why the minority leader did what she did, and she did so very skillfully with input, which shows her leadership abilities there. So, yeah, I mean, I'm kind of hoping that the governor doesn't run again, though. I want more of a fighter. I think this is and he's been really good on some issues, you know, across the board, actually, and been a good backstop. But I want someone out there fighting. I think, especially with Trump and the disaster that Trump is imposing on us, I think the need for a strong public fighter out there is really important. And so I'm looking for someone.
Yeah, so here's the secondary question. And again, folks, if you're just tuning in, Matt and I are batting around, should Governor Evers run for a third term? If your local newspaper here in the state of Wisconsin had the headline tomorrow, Evers announces run for third term, what would your immediate reaction be? 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Here's the sort of like really big picture question that I think looms large over every single race across the country. I understand when we say, I want a fighter, I think what we're saying is, I want an authentic communicator that understands what's really important to people. That's just my take, because here's, I think, what the quandary is, Matt. What the tension is fighting is one thing, governing is another. I'll put that out there as thing one. Thing two is, I think, the fighter, the hard line drawer, the uncompromising is much more possible for folks running on the MAGA side of the ticket. I just, that's their political universe. It's bright lines, it's personal fealty, right? And that they have been, and Republicans for the last 50 years have been really good at intra-party enforcement, right, of their dogma, whatever that is. Certainly, they're probably better at it now than they've ever been with Donald Trump at the helm of their party. The same cannot be true of Democrats. Is the fighter, is somebody who goes hard with very bright lines, does that compromise or does it make it more difficult to build that big tent? 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. In other words, people talk about the Obama coalition, right? Like the people that had to be brought together to win, especially when you look at a state that is truly as purple as Wisconsin is. What do you think, Matt? If somebody goes hard, and I don't mean shying away from the issues, right? I mean, being very clear about what you want, and there is improvement on Governor Evers' part that I would say is an absolutely fair criticism. But can you almost overcorrect as a candidate, especially when you're trying to run statewide in Wisconsin? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think the nub of the question, what you're driving at, is can anybody other than Evers win? Or can anybody who campaigns like Evers or has the demeanor of the governor, can that person win? And that's an open question. You know, we won't know until we run the experiment. And it's a dangerous experiment. But there's no guaranteeing also that Evers is going to win again either. His numbers weren't great in the latest poll. So that's an open question. I know Dan Schaefer has talked about the age issue here on Civic Media and at Recombobulation Area. But I think there are a lot of good potential candidates out there on the Democratic side, which is why I'm hoping the governor decides soon, one way or another, because it's not fair to everybody else if he doesn't do it.
Folks, what would your thought be if tomorrow's headline in your local paper said Evers announces run for a third term? 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Texter from the WAUK says, careful what you wish for. Tony Evers has done things that benefit the most of us here in Wisconsin the entire time he's been in office. His liability factor is that he's good and clearly doesn't demonstrate some of the problems that Biden had or that Trump has. It's interesting. I don't think Tony Evers toots his own horn enough. My question is always not, is there somebody that could run and win that's not named Tony Evers? Because my belief is always, yes, there's always someone. There's never one single candidate or a candidate that's entitled to the presumption of you're the guy for the next time around simply by virtue of incumbency. But I think what you've put your finger on, Matt, is that Democrats seem to wait around. Right there waiting. It's always, well, let's see what, and some of this is gerontocracy. It's the older folks in some of these jobs, which if you're highly capable and you're getting it done, I don't care how old you are, but the presumption that Democrats have that, oh, we don't want to upset the party royalty, instead of vigorously building and then advocating for a succession plan and a pipeline, I think that's always been a problem for Democrats. And I think we're seeing everybody's just waiting around, right?
Like, you know, I totally agree with you, Maggie. And, you know, back to Biden. I mean, a lot of people are blaming Biden's wife and this and the sons and the staff. Yeah, they have responsibility. The media missed it, too. But, where was Newsom? He could have thrown his hat in the ring. You know, where was Gretchen Whitmer? There's no one saying you can't do it. And so none of the big potential candidates got in, and we're in that crisis. So I think right now the prospective candidates on the Democratic side, no matter what Evers said, should be throwing their hats in the ring.
And that, Matt, I think is part of the solution here. And to have points of differentiation with the governor and from Republicans, Democrats shouldn't have to come in one like ultra royal blue variety. And I think that, again, a lot of policing of who is the right kind of candidate, not enough succession planning, and frankly, not enough discussions with folks that are currently in seats about, so what's the plan for when you're done, right? How do we build pipeline? 855-752-4842. Pat, listening on WGBW, says age is nothing but a number. I think there was a song about that. Might not have aged too well. That was sung by Aaliyah. I won't go down the R. Kelly rabbit hole. Pat from WGBW says age is just a number. Tony Evers should run again. We've got one of our good friends on the line. It's Jeannie from Eau Claire. Say hello to Matt. What do you think, Jeannie?
I say sign me up. I think Governor Evers has been an outstanding governor. He's a governor that's been on our side of the state doing things for our side of the state. We never seen the governor over on our side of the state for long, long, many, many years. And the people like him over here as an independent. I think he's great. I know a lot of Republicans who really like him, and definitely Democrats do. Age don't mean a thing, folks. I'm 70. And God darn it, you guys got to quit picking on the age, because there's a lot of people in their 80s can do a great job, too. I mean, I know that we need more younger people. I support younger people, and they got to get in at start in there and start now and get them young people in and gradually move them up. But he is not a show horse. He is a workhorse.
Thanks so much. That's Jeannie from Eau Claire. Let me be clear, because I think that there are folks at every age that could be excellent, excellent chief elected executives and legislators. And I think there's lots of examples of them. My question is, particularly when you've got incumbency, multiple terms, and age, what does that equate to? We're going to continue this discussion on the other side. The text lines are lighting up, 855-752-4842. If your headline in your local paper read tomorrow, Governor Evers seeks third terms, what would your reaction be? We discuss more with Matt Rothschild and I, Maggie Dawn, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. Happy Monday. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. If the paper read tomorrow, Evers seeks third term, what would your reaction be? 855-752-4842. Just your gut reaction to that. Rebecca from Madison texting in on the WMDX line said, Governor Evers has been a solid and centrist governor, but two terms is plenty. And that is such an important point. Tony Evers is actually a centrist. The entire political spectrum has kind of, there's, I would say, way more sort of distance on the extreme right, and density on the extreme right, that it makes centrists seem left. And that is a hard thing to do. I think most chief executives that are elected may have been partisan powerhouses if they came out of legislatures or they were activists or organizers. And then you get into the big chair and you realize, holy cow, I've got to bring a lot of people together to get this governing work done. It's much harder than it looks. I have seen some of that sausage get made, and it is challenging. So what do you think? 855-752-4842. Tomorrow's headline was Evers seeks third term. What would your reaction be? Dan from Wausau has this to say. Evers can clearly do the job, but he's just aged out perception-wise. And while I wish it weren't true, perception is everything. The biggest reason Biden had to step aside was because of perception. It's the biggest reason Trump won, and Evers now needs to step aside. Cam from Appleton throwing his weight behind me and Matt Rothschild for a governor's run. And Cam says to Matt, in debates, Matt, you just have to use slam poetry to respond to your opponent, which I would love to see and would certainly buy a ticket for myself. Folks, I got my guest co-host with me, Matt Rothschild. This to me is not unrelated to the Elon Musk. I'm creating a new political party. I think part of what you and I are talking about indirectly is dissatisfaction of people with limited choices. And then we get into these ideas of ranked choice voting, fusion voting, where folks aren't limited to vote for the party with which they registered in primaries. Do you see also a bigger picture here, really, Matt, when it comes to this very micro question of should Governor Tony Evers seek a third term?
Yeah, I mean, the larger questions are, why do we just have two parties? Why do we just have two choices? I've been wrestling with the idea of third parties and fourth parties for decades now. I remember I wrote a cover story for The Progressive in 1989, do we need a third party? And it wasn't a third party between the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, but I wanted one to the left of, where Bill Clinton was taking the Democratic Party. And I'm reminded of a comment that AOC mentioned the first time when Biden ran the first time and won, and she didn't like his politics, and she said, if we were in Europe, we'd be in totally different parties.
Yeah.
But the Democratic Party has a big tent about it. The Republican Party has a small tent right now.
Yes.
With but Trump's name all over it.
Right, with motivated.
Yeah. But they get their people out. Yeah.
Yes.
And they appeal to their people, and somehow that's worked. But, I do think there is this longing for kind of for getting along. There's and to get the harshness of the rhetoric on both sides to be turned down a little bit. I certainly know that just from talking to people, that there's a longing for that.
And I think that's part of Governor Evers' appeal. I have legit never heard him yell. And I've been in some private meetings with the governor where people had some pointed things to say about stuff. That's not his style. It's interesting, though, Matt, again and again and again, we'll see polling that will say that people will say, I want compromise. I want bipartisanship. I want the rhetoric turned down. And then when they go vote, they vote for just the opposite of that. And I also think, really hardcore cerulean royal blue district Democrats are oftentimes throwing a lot of bombs themselves at centrist type Democrats like the governor. I think you're seeing that in this biennial budget. And it's simply in denial of the coalition that has to be built for Democrats to win. Hence my bigger picture question about, do we really have a two-party problem or a democracy system problem? And again, I'm really excited to talk to a Republican representative later this week about term limits, which I do think are one of the system reforms. Why shouldn't it be two terms and out for our governor by law? Then we're not having these discussions. Democrats and Republicans or any other parties are playing by the same set of rules. I think term limits are good for the system, and that might be a really good bipartisan place to start. Let's go back to the text lines. Lots of folks have opinions here. Love it. Larry from Deerfield says this. I appreciate the desire for someone like Andy Beshear to be our next governor. However, In all fairness, the Kentucky GOP gives him little. Wisconsin is a different kettle of fish. Bottom line, you still need a Dem legislature to make the big changes that are necessary in Wisconsin. Matt's partially right about Biden now that he's not getting in his own way. His recent speeches have been spot on, hardly a mentally diminished guy. What I saw in President Biden was the fatigue of the campaign, the stress of the office, and overly handled, right? Overly manicured, overly massaged. And I think you see that a lot with Democratic candidates. I think you saw it with Kamala Harris. We're going to take a few of our last texts on the other side. And then Matt and I are going to turn to the flooding that is occurring in Texas. And I want to ask each and every one of you this question. How much would you pay to save your family's life from an emergency flood? And do we do enough to avert these sorts of catastrophes and human tragedies in this country, in this state, and in your localities? We continue this discussion on the other side. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. Welcome back and happy Monday. I'm Maggie Dawn, joined by Matt Rothschild today, host of the podcast, Wisconsin Forward. You can find it on Spotify, Apple Pods, and of course at civicmedia.us. We've been discussing whether or not Governor Evers should run for a third time. We're closing out that discussion, but I wanted to give some love to all of the folks on our text line participating. Thank you all. Dan from Wausau said this: I'd vote for Mandela Barnes or Cavalier Johnson for governor, but neither can win the state governor's race since there is just too much racism. Kamala Harris, I believe, would have won the country if she were a white male. That is certainly a big challenge here in the state of Wisconsin. And if you don't believe what I'm saying, I simply point you to the Louis Butler Supreme Court race, where he was beat by know-nothing, do-nothing, corrupt conspiracy theorist extraordinaire. Oh, yeah, I'm going to tack on the word racist, Michael Gableman, a few years back. If this is in your faint, distant memory, go have yourself a good Google time. It's quite rich. Anthony from Mishgat says definitely Tony Evers should run again. Tyler from Wisconsin Rapids says this. This one made me chuckle. Thanks, Tyler. Let mild manner Governor Clark Kent run again, but this time around, he takes off the glasses and waves the cape and battles the Grim Reaper of the House. So Tyler from Wis Rapids, he is in a pro third term for Governor Evers. Terry from Cross Plains says, I'd like to see Governor Evers give it another go, but I'd like to have some competition as well. At this point, we don't know who the Republicans are bringing to the election. That was one of the problems with Biden, right? That you were saying, Matt, we need to see competition. We need to press our candidates to rise to the moment of election. I think this country, because of the two-party system, which our founders never intended, by the way, has created such a preference, advantage, bias, favoritism for incumbents that is part of the problem. That's part of the dissatisfaction that people are feeling. So with that, Matt, I know you and I both wanted to talk about the flooding that has been going on in Texas. It's horrifying. It is an incredible loss of life. The last death toll that I heard was at 95, with somewhere in the ballpark of 27 children and camp counselors dying. There are all sorts of camps along the banks of the river that experienced flash flooding. And I've heard some coverage on other radio stations across this state referring to it as unpreventable, a 100-year flood, nothing to be done here. And that's garbage. Absolute and total garbage. And one of the things that government is supposed to do is this kind of stuff. You cannot go buy a flash flood alarm system off the shelf at Home Depot. Okay? Doesn't exist. You cannot buy flood risk reduction at your local Ace Hardware store. These things are public goods. It's like I can't buy a single widget of clean air, right? I can't buy just, you can buy clean water, but you get my point here. The quantities of this stuff and the way that we consume it make it very difficult to say it costs this much for you and this much for you. And so part of the function of government is providing these things. This is the public health, welfare, and safety element of government. And I worked on research like this when I was in graduate school. I literally ran or helped run an econometric analysis, fancy word. You don't need to know what it says because the name of the study we did is very explanatory. We ran a willingness to pay study for flood risk reduction in and around the Milwaukee, Menominee, and other really river floodplains in and around southeastern Wisconsin, because southeastern Wisconsin had repeatedly experienced these flash floods, and people's homeowners insurance was maxed, and the premiums were getting out of reach. So, Matt, I wanted us to check in here because the reporting that I have seen is that the regional office of the National Weather Service that was responsible for this area was fully staffed with frontline staff, but that there are vacancies, plural, in key managerial positions, including one managerial position that is specifically about warning coordination and getting the word out. And folks, if you're not familiar with this region of Texas, it's valleys, basically. And cell service, oh yeah, that other thing that government helps people get access to the internet, better cell service, it's very spotty in places. So Matt, as this tragedy has unfolded, I've been curious about your reactions, because this is one of those things that I point to and I say, that's something that we should be demanding, that every person should be demanding government should be able to do something about. Those are harms that we should be able to avoid.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this has been such a tragic story. I mean, my wife and I, early this afternoon, were watching Katie Tour on MSNBC. We love Katie Tour. And, you know, she was covering it. She had reporters there in Kerrville talking about, you know, people, family members who lost loved ones. And it's almost too brutal to watch. And so the human tragedy is just insufferable here. And my heart goes out to any family that lost somebody here. But you're absolutely right. I mean, it says in the preamble to the U.S. Constitution that one of the functions of government is to provide for the general welfare. And this is providing for the general welfare. I mean, here in Wisconsin, we have tornadoes. And so we have loudspeakers all over rural areas and urban areas that will blare a tornado warning so we all can hear it and so we all can get in our basements or get to the safest place we know. The tragedy here, there's a double tragedy. There's a tragedy at the local level and there's a tragedy at the national level. At the local level, Kerr County,
yes.
The representatives on the Kerr County Board had discussed whether they should put up loudspeakers and decided it wasn't worth the cost. Well, those people must be having nightmares today, because look at the cost, the human cost. Forget even about the economic cost right now, the human cost of this tragedy. And then at the national level, I mean, you mentioned the warning coordination meteorologist. I just want to read two paragraphs, one's
please,
from the Washington Post and one's from the New York Times. From the Washington Post, ahead of these floods, this is about Trump's cuts, Elon Musk's cuts, Doge's cuts. Ahead of these floods, the Weather Service office near San Antonio, which oversees warnings issued in Kerr County, had one key vacancy, as Maggie talked about, a warning coordination meteorologist who is responsible for working with emergency managers and the public to ensure people know what to do when a disaster strikes. The person who served in that role for decades was among hundreds of Weather Service employees who accepted early retirement offers and left the agency at the end of April. This is when, you know, Elon Musk was, you know, saying you guys are going to be fired unless you leave early.
Yeah, forced retirement. Yep.
Yeah. And then this from the New York Times. crucial positions at the local offices of the National Weather Service were unfilled as severe rainfall inundated parts of Central Texas, prompting some experts to question whether staffing shortages made it harder for the forecasting agency to coordinate with local emergency managers as floodwaters rose. I mean, you know, this is the human cost of these brutal cuts. And to say nothing of the cuts about studying, you know, global warming, which may have played a part here, too. I mean, we're going to be flying blind here. He's cutting FEMA. He's cutting global warming research. They're cutting
NOAA,
folks from the National Weather Service.
NOAA, yeah. Which houses the National Weather Service. And here's what I want people to hear, because the terminology that gets used is harmful, as are some of the headlines that I've seen in tons of mainstream news. They're calling it the flood of the century. We have now emergency rescues occurring in Durham County, North Carolina. 80 people just rescued by boat in Durham County. There are other horrifying floods in North Carolina that will take lives. The flood in North Carolina is being referred to as a 1,000-year flood event of the Eno River. Again, we're talking about Kerr County in Texas Hill Country. They're calling this the flood of the century, a 100-year flood. Folks, I'm a statistician. It doesn't mean that this only happens once in 100 years. It means that based on historical models, which most good faith scientists now believe need massive updating because of the acceleration of climate change, it means that based on those past models, a 100-year flood has it means in a given year, there's a 1% chance of a catastrophic flood of this type. What we're seeing now are 100-year floods with increasing frequency. So the term 100-year flood is bad. Get rid of it. What you should be asking is, when's the last time a fatal flash flood occurred in Kerr County? And oh yeah, 8 years ago, the same damn thing happened. That's what triggered this discussion by Kerr County elected officials about, should we install a siren or warning system, a gauge system, so you can actually have a gauge that will say, oh, the river levels are going up. Ooh, they're going up really fast. We need to let people know downriver to evacuate. These were needless and avoidable deaths. Children, and guess who died last time? 8 years ago. Kids at what? Another sleepaway camp. Mm. This is the stuff that just absolutely boils my blood. And when you think about the intersection of universities that conduct the sort of studies that I was part of when I was where? At university studying econometrics. You talk about the need for scientists in government, objective people in government to help do this work. The people that are at gravest risk for these existential weather emergency events are folks in rural counties. Because what you have in bigger and urban counties is local governmental infrastructure to do some of the work that needs to be done in these places, with the gutting of these departments by DOGE and Donald Trump. Rural counties and rural kids are at greater risk. And I hate to put it this way, but it is not just a failure of government writ large. It's a failure of Republicans in government and the anti-tax brigade, that the objective in every legislative session is, no matter what the need, no matter what the risk, we just want lower taxes. So I ask you, each and every one of you, what's your family worth? Are you willing to pay more taxes to avoid these kinds of avoidable disasters? This conversation continues on the other side with you and Matt Rothschild, Nancy on the line, Kurt on the line. Your chance is next, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. I'm Maggie Dawn, and you are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. As devastating tragedy rips through Texas and now North Carolina, with what some climate scientists are calling a 100-year and a 1,000-year flood, respectively, should the government have been able to predict it? My answer is yes. And here are the facts. Do not listen to what they are saying about it being a 100-year flood or a 1,000-year flood. All that is predictive statistics based on now out-of-date climate models that have not been updated to reflect the current climate reality. As evidence of this, you can point to the same area of Texas where the flooding is now occurring, taking upwards of 95 lives, including children. A flood happened a decade ago. They argued about funding to warn people to detect these flash floods, and they voted it down. And there was a similar flood in 1987. So, you know, not one every 100 years. But that misnaming, that mislabeling, that completely misleading discussion of the risk has led to this reality. Texas has a growing backlog of flood management projects. Anybody surprised here? Ted Cruz was in Greece when the tragedy has been striking in Texas, like he flew to Cancun or wherever he was when the Texas was getting frozen over.
He didn't run back during these floods either. He was touring the Parthenon, kept on his tour.
Yes. $54 billion in backlog, okay? Texas lawmakers, they just appropriated $669 million. Not going to save Texas lives, but what did they prioritize? More tax cuts. And a county commissioner who voted against $50,000 to conduct an engineering study to help this county understand its flood risk, said when he voted against it, "I think this whole thing is a little extravagant for Kerr County with sirens and such." I mean,
yeah,
it's like
that feel today?
Boss Hogg, that one aged really well, didn't it?
Wow.
Let's go to the phones. Kurt from Madison, you're up next. Say hello to Matt. What are your thoughts?
Hi, Matt. In my early days before I joined the military, I worked for a surveyor. And most, I would say half of our surveyors were done for the state of Wisconsin. We would map out floodplains based on creeks, rivers, even if they're a dry riverbed.
Yep.
And if there was anything of a potential, this is going back to the 80s, mind you.
Yep.
Potentials, there would be signs that be in the ground established that this is a floodplain. And now let's fast forward to today with all our technology. I get very angry when something like this happens because there are telemetry systems. They're not expensive. Almost most of the vineyards in California use them already because they have to, you know, their entire cost of living is dependent on their crops.
Yeah.
But there's no excuse, absolutely no excuse, to not having telemetry systems placed along this dangerous floodplain. And furthermore, the fact that if you actually did the surveying of the area and you looked at the proximity of this camp within a given floodplain, given the distance of where it's coming from, it's gaining velocity and volume. I just shake my head. It's just like, we're not talking millions of dollars here. We're talking a bunch of surveys, buying the equipment. Yeah, you're going to have to hire someone to set it up and monitor it. But it's literally a drop in the bucket compared to just 10 years ago, if not 20 years ago.
Yeah, and that's when, thank you so much for the call, Kurt. That's when I was doing my graduate work. And we worked with people that were engineers that did this kind of surveying. We mapped these floodplains. We used geocoding systems to understand them, to help understand water flows. This is doable. This is Army Corps of Engineers stuff. This is the work of government. And for government to say, for Ron Johnson in a hearing 2 years ago in climate change to say, it's fine if people in the South die because we're not going to die as much in Wisconsin as the climate warms up, is disgusting. It's inhuman. I don't understand this acceptance of the failure of government being exacerbated and metastasized by the likes of Donald Trump gutting the very research and scientific work, systems, and employees that we rely on to keep us safe. Matt, go ahead. You got the last word this afternoon.
Well, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, this is the fallacy of the ideology that the government is the problem. When Grover Norquist, the
yes.
ideologist of the right, says we're going to drown government in a bathtub, little girls actually drown.
When you drown government in a bathtub, what really ends up happening is Americans die more. We're sicker and poorer. Government helps us keep us all safe. Do we need to improve our regulatory systems? Yes. Do we always need to push for greater accountability? I've always viewed myself when I worked in government as a fiduciary to the taxpayer. Hell yes. And we can acknowledge that regulations are for regular people and small businesses to keep our communities safe and competition fair. Don't believe the hype from the right, because that is what it is. If you want to help folks in Texas, here are some organizations that are looking for help. The Center Point Volunteer Fire Department, that is the Center Point Volunteer Fire Department, is accepting online donations. The Care County Flood Relief Fund. Oh, yeah. The Care County Flood Relief Fund. They had to set one of those up instead of paying for early warning and detection systems. The Salvation Army's Careville Croc Center. That is the Salvation Army down there. And I will post the rest of these organizations in our show notes for today. My thanks to each and every one of you and Matt Rothschild, our great guest today, Senator Dianne Hesselbein. Stay tuned for Pete Schwabe and Nightlight. And don't forget, tomorrow we've got an expert consumer advocate telling you what to expect from the big, brutal bill and more Trump trade wars. I'm Maggie Dawn. This has been a Monday edition of the Maggie Dawn Show. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.